Welcome to Taiwan Report News Brief, news analysis and context from Taichung, Taiwan. I'm your host, Donovan Smith. All right, Taoyuan residents on Saturday voted to recall DPP Taoyuan City Councilor Wang Haoyu. He is the first councilor in a special municipality ever to be recalled. He was crushed. The final results of the recall in the Taoyuan City District of Zhongli showed 84,582 votes, or 92.23%, in favor of the recall, and 7,128, or 7.7%, against, with a total 28% turnout. To succeed, the recall needed at least a 25% turnout and a little over 80,000 votes, both of which they achieved, though not by huge margins. The number of people who turned out in support for Wang was quite low. Now, this is also the first of the so-called revenge recalls launched by supporters of recalled Kaohsiung Mayor Han Kuo-yu. The three councillors were targeted, all of them well known for their dislike of Han. One, the attempted recall of DPP Kaohsiung City Councillor Chen Zhizhong, the son of former President Chen Shui-bian, failed to get enough signatures to qualify. Another, the recall of independent Kaohsiung City Councilor Huang Jie, did get enough signatures, and her recall vote is coming up in February. Commenting on Wang's loss, Huang said she trusted the people of her Fengshan district would support her. Hopefully, she'll get more support than Wang. Wang was originally of the Green Party, but recently switched to the DPP. He had made enemies of the Han fans through his frequent attacks on Han online, though he also attacked the Taiwan People's Party and New Power Party, so he had a lot of enemies. There is now an effort to launch another recall against a Taiwan State Building Party legislator, Chen Bo-wei, also known as Sang Q or 3Q, which of course sounds like thank you in English to Taiwanese ears. Taipei City Councilor, KMT school head, and potential mayoral candidate Luo Zhiqiang called it a bye-bye Sang Q campaign. The bar to win a recall in Taiwan is very low, requiring only 25% of voters to approve and a majority vote. Considering that it is exceedingly rare that losing candidates get less than 25%, the main challenge is mobilizing to get the signatures to qualify and to get their partisan voters out to the polls. This opens the way for the system to be abused for purely partisan reasons and for revenge, as in this case. Raising the bar, perhaps to 35%, would make it more likely that a successful recall was due to genuine misconduct or complaints. Enoch Wu, or Winong, faces no opposition in his bid to head the DPP Taipei chapter after a former Taipei city councilor dropped out of the race. Voting by eligible party members on January 31st is still required, but the registration date has passed. Wu has also announced he plans another run for legislator in 2024. Now, the frontrunner on the KMT side to run for mayor of Taipei is Wayne Chang, or Jiang Wan'an, the great-grandson of the dictator Chiang Kai-shek and grandson of Jiang Jingguo. Wu and Chang faced off against each other in a legislative race in the 2020 election that was widely followed and widely commented on as the race as the Battle of the Hunks. Now, Jiang won, but Wu did respectably well, considering Jiang was the incumbent in a traditionally KMT-dominated district. If Jiang does become mayor, Wu may have a better chance to win, though much will depend on who the KMT runs. Another potential problem is that Wu, according to the expert on the subject, Nathan Batto, writing at Frozen Garlic, is that he's not a very good campaigner. Now, Wu is an interesting character worth keeping an eye on. He's American-born and educated, but also has some well-known relatives in Taiwan. He worked for, if I recall correctly, Goldman Sachs at one point. At age 33, he moved to Taiwan and renounced his U.S. citizenship and then did his military service. He's currently deputy chief executive of DPP think tank, the New Frontier Foundation, and has widely advocated for military reform. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on the 9th announced that the U.S. was lifting all guidelines on official contacts with Taiwanese officials. The guidelines, which range from who could meet with Taiwanese officials, where to where they could meet, how they could refer to Taiwan, and even what they could wear. These guidelines were purely self-imposed by the State Department, and there was nothing in any U.S. agreements with Beijing that required them. Over recent years, the guidelines had been relaxed, but it's a good thing they're finally gone. This may open the possibility of Taiwan reoccupying their historic Twin Oaks residence in Washington, D.C., and to fly the flag. The State Department stated they have been studying this move for some time, and unrelated to the fact that there was only 11 days left until a new president takes office. Now, I don't know if that is the case, but the timing could have been better. If they had done it earlier, it would have become commonplace and standardized. Still, there are advantages to the timing. But almost all analysts got it totally wrong, with the exception of Jenna Lynn Cody at her blog, Laura and Cha, who nailed it, and I recommend you read her analysis, which is linked to on report.tw. Almost everyone assumed it was intended to, as various outlets called it, box in, booby trap, landmine, sabotage, and so forth, the incoming Biden administration. It did no such thing, precisely the opposite. First, it is in line with the Taiwan Assurance Act, which called for it. The act passed Congress with strong bipartisan support. Second, this allows the incoming Biden administration to avoid taking blame for this by Beijing. They'll blame Trump and Pompeo for this. Third, this is not at all in contradiction of the U.S. One China policy or the Taiwan Relations Act. Far from being a trap, Biden's administration can make good on the Taiwan Assurance Act essentially scot-free. It is possible, in a fit of partisan pique against the outgoing administration and or to appease China, the Biden administration could undo this, though that wouldn't accomplish anything useful and would provoke the ire of Congress, including on their side of the aisle. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said, "We urge the U.S. to fulfill the series of promises it has made and immediately stop any words and acts of enhancing its relations and military connections with the island of Taiwan. We advise Pompeo and the like to stop manipulating Taiwan-related issues and stop taking the opposite and wrong path. Otherwise, they will be severely punished by history." It is interesting to note that in comments coming out of the PRC, there's little to no mention of the incoming Biden administration on this issue, but plenty of vitriol directed at Pompeo. Note the wording, severely punished by history. In other words, they expect the incoming Biden administration to continue with this. That's not the only huge news coming out of the outgoing administration. The government declassified their internal United States strategic framework for the Indo-Pacific region. In it, it outlines how the Trump administration intended to essentially counter China alongside allies, including Taiwan. The strategy commits to devise and implement a defense strategy capable of, but not limited to, 1. Denying China sustained air and sea dominance inside the first island chain in a conflict. 2. Defending the first island chain nations, including Taiwan. And 3. Dominating all domains outside the first island chain. It also said that the U.S. should enable Taiwan to develop an effective asymmetric defense strategy and capabilities that will help ensure its security, freedom from coercion, resilience, and ability to engage China on its own terms. Let me read part two again. Defending the first island chain nations, including Taiwan. Now, while defending could be interpreted as meaning various things, it is highly suggestive that the U.S. means in a military sense. It's interesting that the current administration declassified the framework. Clearly, they're hoping it will influence the decision-making of the incoming administration. While the incoming administration could well scrap this framework, it is worth noting they've been using similar, though not identical, Indo-Pacific language. The Biden administration has also picked Kirk Campbell as a newly created Indo-Pacific coordinator, which many have dubbed Asia's czar. This pick has been widely praised by pro-Taiwan commentators and people in the know, as he has clearly stated that the old China appeasement policies haven't worked, and he's very knowledgeable and interested in Taiwan. All right, that's it for the show. Be sure to hit like and subscribe, all that good stuff. And we beseech you, please become a patron of ours on Patreon and support us and keep this project going.
This has been brought to you by the Taiwan Report. For more content like this, become our patron at report.tw.
哎呦，就是那个台湾狗啦，最喜欢我的台湾狗了。